Okay, the boy side, today's daf is daf Kuf Nun Zayin, and we're holding it to Mishnah towards the top of the Yomid. And the Mishnah tells us of a terrible tragedy, Rachmon Litzlan. Nofal Habayis Olov V'Yal Oviv. Nebuch A. There was a building collapse. Reminds us of what happened in Surfside a little bit more than a year ago. Nebuch A. Building collapsed. And in this case, two family members passed away. Olov V'Yal Oviv. Rishbam makes it easy, reminds us of what it says in the Torah. It fell on Reuven and on Yaakov Oviv. Yaakov, the father of Reuven, never both of them passed away. Oy, Olov Yal Mirishav, or could be any type of situation. It doesn't have to be Dafka, a father and son. It's someone who passed away and someone that would be Moirish to him, that he would go and get Yerusha from them. Rishbam gives examples of, for instance, Achei Reuven. Reuven passed away together with a brother or together with an uncle. And in each situation, Reuven was the closest Korov to the Nifter, either to Yaakov, for instance, he was the only son, for instance, and or an uncle of his, Yaakov's brother, Esav died, and Esav left the Yerusha for him, and so on and so forth. Okay, so what does all of that mean? Lahalacha. V'hoisa olav ksuvas isha ubal choiv. Unfortunately, Reuven was a pauper. He never had a dime in his life. And Nebuch Rachmon Litzlan, he died Nebuch a pauper. However, he had a wife that wanted to get her ksuva, and he had bali choiv that wanted to get paid back on their choivais. So therefore, even though for the last 10, 20 years he didn't have a penny to his name, it's theoretically possible that he became a multimillionaire for a split moment. How is that? What happens if Yaakov was very rich? Reuven Nebuch was very poor. Who passed away first? If Yaakov passed away first, then he left that whole estate for his son Reuven. Oh, Reuven's now a wealthy man. Reuven passed away a second later. But guess what? Now when we're administering the two estates, assuming that, in fact, Reuven passed away, the second one, then the Isha says, oh, he's got plenty of money, because he yarshined it for that split second from his father, from Yaakov. He passed away a very rich man. Pay me my ksuba. On the other, same thing applies to Bal Choyv. Bal Choyv says, Reuven owed me money. I never dreamed I'd be able to get paid back. But now that Yaakov passed away a minute earlier, and then Reuven yarshined him for that 1 minute, became wealthy, he got more than $100, and now when he passed away, oh, there's money in the estate to pay me. So that's what the Isha and the Balei Choiv are saying. On the other hand, the other Yorshim, the Yorshio Av Oimrim, Haben Meis Rishon V'Yachach Meiso Av. In other words, Yaakov had other sons, or Yaakov had brothers, etc. And they say, nah, you don't know what you're talking about. Reuven passed away first, leaving nothing for anybody. After that, passed away Yaakov, and then Yaakov is still the rich man that he was, and he left the Yerusha not for Reuven, Reuven never was dead, but rather he left the Yerusha for other sons, for Shimon Levi Yehuda, or for brothers of Yaakov, or whoever the real Yorshim were. So the Yorshi Av Oimim HaBen Meis Rishon, V'Yakach Meisa Av, and so therefore there's no money in the estate, in Reuven's estate, to go and pay even a nickel to the Isha or to the Bal Choyv. The Bal Choyv said the other way around. Ubali Achoyv Oimim, this Bal Choyv now includes the Bal Choyv together with the Isha who wants to get her ksuba. They both say, no, I'm Meis Rishon, the father died first, V'Yakach Meisa Ben, and then the son died, and therefore he died a rich man. So what do you do under these circumstances? There's no way of determining, because in a building collapse like that, you can't tell whether Yaakov died first, Reuven died first. So what's to do? Is the machloiku between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? Beis Shammai oimrim yachloiku, or Beis Hillel oimrim nechosim b'cheskosim. What does that mean? Let's take Beis Hillel first, because that's the easier one to explain. And that is, says Beis Hillel, it's really a case of Sofik and Vadai, or Bori and Shema, in the sense that the Yorshe Av are going to Yarshin one way or the other. Right? We have Yaakov and we have Reuven. We don't know who died first. And who are the successors? Who are the Yorshim? Lomazong, the Yorshim are Yaakov's son, Chanoich. In Torah it says it, not Yaakov. Reuven's son, the Torah says, Bnei Reuven, Chanoich Ufalu. Chanoich Ufalu. So, Reuven had these two sons, Chanoich Ufalu. What happens now? There's these three people, four people. We have Yaakov, we have Reuven, and we have Chanoich Ufalu. Fine. Either Yaakov died first, or Reuven died first. But who are going to be the ultimate Yarshim? The ultimate Yarshim are going to be Chanoich Ufalu. Why? Because either they're going to Yarshim because they Yarshim from their father, and their father Yarshim from their Zaydi, from Yaakov. And even if Chas V'Sholem not, in other words, even if Reuven passed away first, and then Yaakov passed away second, who does Yaakov leave his Nechosim to? Reuven is not here, so it'll be to Reuven's children, to Chanoich Ufalu.
Goes down first before it goes left.
Exactly right. Exactly. Goes down first. We had that Gemara before. Ben v'chol yoytze yerecha shel ben, come before any bas, and come before the aviv, and before all the uncles. So to make it a very simple case, Yaakov, Reuven, Chanoich Ufalu, the children. To make it even simpler, just Chanoich without Falu. Good. So now Chanoich is going to go at Yashin either way. Either because he's going to Yashin from his father, or because he's going to Yashin from his grandfather. But ultimately, the Yerusha is going to come to him. So he's a Vadai. The question is not whether the Isha or the Bal Choiv get paid. That's a suffix. Because I don't know who passed away first. Did Yaakov pass away first, or Reuven pass away first? If Yaakov passed away first, Reuven became enriched for a split moment, and guess what? Then the Isha and then the Bal Choiv were able to receive their money. On the other hand, if Reuven died a split second before Yaakov, Reuven died a pauper, never had a penny to his life, to his name. So what happens now to Yaakov? Yaakov passes away, and all the Yerusha falls the Einikov. And therefore, the Einikov certainly get their money at the end of the day, either straight from their father Reuven, or indirectly they get it straight from Yaakov. But they definitely get the money. The question is, with
don't Reuven heirs, Chanoch, don't they also inherit the liabilities of the estate, the Chovos, and the Ksuvah Isha? So even though they may not get directly through Yaakov passing first, Reuven inheriting, and then bequeathing it to Chanoch, but doesn't they get the, even if Reuven dies first, they inherit the liabilities of their father, so ultimately they get the estate from Yaakov. Shouldn't that net out against the liabilities they inherited from their father?
When a person passes away and leaves over no estate or minimal estate, but leaves over lots and lots of chayvos, and there are a bunch of children, the children have no legal duty to go and pay the chayvos of their father if there was no money in the estate. It happens to be a very, very beautiful thing. It's ethically and equitably nice and fine, and so obviously a kibbut av, but they have no legal requirement whatsoever.
Okay.
You may or may not know Rabbi Wolf, who was the rabbi of Shoichet Man for many, many years, Rabbi Henry Wolf. And I remember my father, Zichron Avrocha, told me one of the major qualities of Rabbi Wolf was that when his father passed away, he left a lot of chayvos, and Rabbi Wolf was concerned about the bad name he had in the community, and Rabbi Wolf paid everything off from his own money. He wasn't able to do it in one day, but he worked hard, and maybe worked overtime, maybe took a second job, until he made enough money to pay everybody off. So that was a beautiful thing that he did. However, he had no legal responsibility. If a father passed away with choybis, I feel very bad, but it's his choybis, it's not my choybis.
No?
Okay, you want to call it that? That's fine, too.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. So, says the Gemara, they have now a major dispute. So, Basil says, Nechosim Mecheskosin. What means Mecheskosin? Mecheskas Hayorshim. That is Chanoich. Because Chanoich says, I'm going to get it anyway. I'm either going to get it from my father, I'm going to get it from my grandfather. But he's going to get it. It's not going to go to the government. It's not going to go to anybody else. So, I zich again. Whether the Isha or the Bal Choiv get, that's questionable. So, therefore, we have a Bari Veshema. That's why our Gemara says, according to Basil, the Yorishim get, the other guy's a Shema, they're out of the picture.
What happens in the case, you know, because go the order, during Yaakov, Reuven, and then goes to Hanukkah, right? But Reuven was 1 minute on the line, and then he died.
If you Reuven, still go. Continue on.
you know, Yaakov, Reuben died in that order, okay?
Okay, good.
And then Reuben was only 1 minute alive.
He was a rich man for a minute.
For a minute.
Right.
But then it goes to Hanoch.
Correct.
The wife has no claim, the ketubah.
No, so any time Chas Hashem a person passes away and he leaves a wife, has a right to receive her ketubah.
Yeah.
And so therefore, who is administering the ketubah? Presumably Hanoch, the son of Reuven. And now the wife, his mother, or his stepmother says, you got to pay me my ketubah. Oh, daddy didn't have any money. No, daddy had tons of money. When? Since Yaakov passed away, and Yaakov was a multimillionaire, all of a sudden Reuven for a split moment became a multimillionaire, and then he passed away, unfortunately. But therefore, since he passed away with an estate having lots of money, Chanoich has to pay the ketubah.
So when you're saying wife, did you delineate if it's the wife of Yaakov or the wife of Reuven?
Reuven's wife. I'm sorry if I didn't say that clearly. Reuven's wife and Reuven's Balei Choyv. Yaakov, Baruch Hashem, had no Balei Choyv, and his wife predeceased him, so that's an old matter, nothing to talk about today. So that's Meisil and Nechasim Cheskosan, Rishbam says, because of Bari Veshema, Bari Veodif, or if you want, a Sofik and Avada, Yvain Sofik, Moitzim and Avada. Beis Shammai says, Yachloikim. Now, why does Beis Shammai say Yachloikim? So I know many of us are thinking, and certainly Barry is thinking, because of Samchis, Mamna Mutl, but Sofik is Cholkim. But Rishbam says you don't have to go with that svara of Samchis. It's you have another svara, and that is Beis Shammai holds throughout Shas shtaru oimid ligvois kegovui dami. That means that any time a person owns a shtar that somebody else owes him money, he has a promissory note. That promissory note is like a piece of the possessions because he has shibudim on the possessions. It happens to be like it's good as gold. Obviously, it's better to go and get such a shtar from a wealthy person rather than from a pauper. But shtar oimid ligvois kegovui dami, and so therefore the Baal Choyv as well as the isha, they are like in possession of whatever debt is represented by the shtar. Ah, so then they are also vadais, says Rishbam. They are also holding a piece of the pie.
Well,
why is it davar shelo ba'olam?
Because you don't have the mortgage yet. You don't have the property.
You don't have the property, but you have the mortgage rights. You have the lien rights. Anytime a person lends money, not for me, so you don't if other people want, but...
Just in case.
Yes, okay, fine, he's on tight. Shkoyach, thank you very much. It's just a shame to go and open up and afterwards if nobody uses it, you don't want the fist to... Thank you, but thank you very much. Anyway, so the Mishnah is telling us that according to Beis Shammai, it's as if it was already collected, and therefore it's as if the Isha has the money in hand, and as if the Baal Choyv has the money in hand, so therefore they are just as muchzik as Beis Hillel says that the Yorshim are muchzik. It's not that much different than when you buy a house and you go and take a mortgage, that who has the equity now in this building? Some say, well, equity, the person that bought the building. Others say, no, the bank has the equity. So that's why they call this the equity, and they say that's the debt equity. So here too, the Isha, together with the Baal Choyv, they also have debt equity in the possessions of the Nifter. So therefore, they're also Vadoim. So when Reuven passed away, assuming that Reuven left over Nechasim, they own those Nechasim. So they're also Muchzokim to a certain extent. And that's as far as Beis Shammai. But Beis Hillel obviously goes and rejects that svar. So looking more Tanan Hasam. We learned in the Mishnah, it's a Mishnah that is familiar to all of us because we've had this halacha many times, although the actual Mishnah is going to be in Get Poshet, which is the final perek in our Masechta. So what does it say in the Mishnah? Hamal v'schaber b'shtar, a person who lends money and there is a halvo b'shtar. Goyim v'nechasim m'shubadim. Then you can go and collect not only from Nechasim Bnei Choyrim, but also Nechasim Meshubadim. We know what Nechasim Meshubadim means, that if the Loive had any property, and he sold the property to somebody else, that Lekeach that bought the property, he has impressed on the property a lien to go and pay for the original Havah. And Lechatchili should go right in the Shtar that I'm giving you Achrayis. Achrayis means a money back guarantee. But even if he doesn't write it, we have that famous rule that Barry always refers to, and that is Achrayis Toy Sofer. Even if the Sofer left it out, there's an automatic din of Achrayis. Okay, so a person who who lends money with a shtar, goyve, he can collect from the chasam mishabodim, not only from the loyve, but anybody who bought property from the loyve. What happens, however, if he didn't write a bishtar, but it was a milval peh, al yidei edim, edim witnessed it, but there was no shtar, then you can only collect from an echoyrin and not from mishubad. Okay.
You can only collect from?
Ben echoyrin, not mishubad.
Unencumbered.
You have a malva and a loiva. Malva lends money to a loiva.
Mm-hmm.
The maturity date comes and goes,
right.
And the malva says, loiva, you owe me money.
Mm-hmm.
If the loiva has the money, or he has nechosim, which are in his possession, then those are called ben echoyrin. And you collect from those b'nei chayim.
Right.
Baruch Hashem, he has the cash, or he has a piece of real estate, or whatever. He collects from that.
Right.
Those are called b'nei chayim. What happens if the loiva says, sorry, I have nothing left, I have only 50 cents to get me on the subway, and that's not enough to get on the subway today. So what do you do then? Well, I remember when I lent you money, you owned real estate. That's true, but I sold the real estate. Who did you sell it to? I sold it to Yanko Smith. That real estate is called Mishubadim. Why is it called Mishubadim? Because there's a shibud, there's a lien on that property to pay for that choiv.
Mm-hmm.
That, good. So now the malva goes to Yanko Smith, knocks on the door, you owe me $100. I don't know you, I don't even know who you are. Oh, you're going to find out. There's a lien on your property. Didn't you buy this property from the loiva? Yes, I bought the property from the loiva. Didn't you know that there's a lien on it to go and pay for all choivs? Yes. Did you know about my choiv? I don't know, I asked the lawyers, maybe you, maybe Nish. Well, whether you knew it or not, I got a lien, I'm going to collect from you. That's called being collecting from the Chosim Meshubadim. Good?
Mm-hmm.
Bo Yishmuel, the Ikni v'kona mahu. What happens if the Ikni? What means the Ikni? Normally when you go and give a shtar halva, and the malva says to loiva, what is my lien, where are my shibudim? So he says, well, you have a shibud on all of my nechasim, not just a specific lien, a mortgage just on my house, but anything that I own. I have five different pieces of real estate, one here, one in Texas, one in California, whatever. It spreads all over. Yes.
I'm sorry, can we backtrack? Can we explain why one that's with a shtar and one that's with just edim oral changes whether you could collect from mishubadim?
It's a very good question. And the answer is because why should an innocent bystander who buys a piece of property have a lien to pay for that other person's choyvos? I don't even know that he has choyvos. I go over to the loiva, put an ad in the paper, he's selling a piece of property, corner 91st and West End Avenue, I'm buying it. I didn't know that there were any liens on it.
Well, aren't you supposed to do your due diligence?
Exactly. How do you do your due diligence? By finding out, are there any shtaris out there? Because if there's a piece of paper, then you can locate it, then you can go and try to find records, you can find the edim that signed, track it down. And then your lawyers or your investigators, your appraisers, whoever, they're going to act accordingly. But if it's all bal peh, how am I supposed to know? Did he maybe he borrowed money 5 minutes ago, maybe he borrowed money 500 years ago, maybe he paid it already 300 times? There's no way to go and find any records.
So you ask the owner, right? Is there a lien on
it? I don't know. I'm just so many financial things. Speak to my accountant, speak to my lawyer. I don't know. I'm just selling you this piece of property. If you want it, it's good. If you don't want it, it's also good. You know, I'm going to go on to the next buy. Don't ask me so many questions. See, he doesn't say anything. He's not lying. He just says, you want to buy it, it's fine. You don't want to buy it, it's also good. So the point of all of this is, if there happens to be a shtar, it's well known in the community, and nowadays, of course, it would be a registered thing on the...
But back then, every shtar was registered, like everyone knew every dealing. I mean, just because it's a shtar, is there like a central place where these things are registered? No.
And the Gemara says that ishtar islei kola. When there's a shtar, there's a kol. How is there a kol? The scribe that wrote it, the edim that signed it, the bezin that administered it, especially if there's a henpik, people know. We know that Yankov. Somebody goes
every little real estate transaction. Everybody, I mean,
that was the assumption, for better or for worse. And therefore, if in fact you bought a piece of property, you bought it knowing that there are a whole bunch of liens on that property, assuming that there were any existing debts. So now, what happens when the malva and the loiva get together? And the malva says to the loiva, I want to know what is the security that I have for my loan. So he says, well, whatever properties I have. So the Malva went and took an appraisal of all those properties. He says, it's a mislishmach, you know what? Not only whatever properties I own today, whatever properties I'm going to buy in the future, whether it's now, whether it's 2 years from now, 5 years from now, any time prior to the maturity date, any of those properties will also, I impress a lien already on them now for purposes of your chayf.
Isn't that shalom bala olam?
That's the Gemara's question, and that's what we're dealing with. Shkoyach
Ariel. Very hypothetical.
You've paved the way for our Gemara. Boy Shmuel, the Ikni, what happens if he writes in the shtar, not only those nechasim that I have presently, but the Asir le'Ikni, those that I'm going to buy in the future. The Konanitaka bought properties in the future. And now the Malva wants to collect from those newly bought properties, in other words, properties that were bought post the original Halva, but now it's maturity date. I want to buy, get to collect from those properties. Mal Kani. So now what did Ariel say a moment ago? Aliba d'rameya di omar, odem matne, dovash loy bala oylam, loy tiboyolach, tivadikon. Madach Rameir holds that you can be matne something that you don't even own, then you can certainly go and be mishabed something. Mishabed means put a lien on something, because putting a lien on something is less than actually being matne. For instance, if I'm selling to you fruits that don't even exist yet, they're going to be planted, they're going to go and grow, and Mi'at Hashem, yeah, and I'm selling them to you. That's a Dovah Shalom B'loilem. So, if, according to the Mei, if you can go and sell that and get money for it, then certainly you can go and be Meshaba, just put a lien on future income, future payers, future real estate that I go and buy. So that's no Shaila. Elikiti Boy Lachalib Drabbanan. The Amri Ein Odem Makna Davar Shalom B'Olam. Right? Isn't that what you just said? A person cannot be Makna Davar Shalom Bali Olam. So that being the case, can you be Meshabet a Davar Shalom B'Olam? Now, why would Shibud be different? So Rishbam says two Svaris. Number one, because Shibud is less than being Makna. Makna, you're handing it over. It doesn't belong to me. How can I hand it over? However, putting a Shibud on it is putting just a lien, just a like a restriction. It's not actually conveying it, so that's already a lesser form. Maybe the Chacham would hold that that's okay.
It also but, can be like a conditional, meaning only if I come to acquire this, then there's
for
a lien.
Sure, if you don't acquire it, right, then you never can get a lien. Absolutely, no question. So you're saying that's another reason why it would work, because you can say it's conditional. Very good. Inami says, Rishbam, another reason. Maybe the reason why the Rabban would allow you to go and put a shibud on the chosim that you don't own yet is to be able to strengthen the credit market, because you want to encourage people to lend money to others, because people need to buy and sell and they need money and they don't have money and they went to the bank and the bank says, well, you know, 8%, 10% interest.
Like when Hillel made the prosbo.
Exactly. Well, very, very good. So perhaps the Chacham said, even though normally Chacham would hold Ein Odem Makne Davshel Baloilam, however the Chacham said, because we want to incentivize Malvin to lend to Loivim, you can go and press and impress a lien even on properties that you don't own yet, but that you're going to Mirchem own in the future. So that's the Shaila according to Shmuel. Does that work, yes or no?
But even for Rameir, we said it has to be someone in
Be'ola. Yeah, well, it's not clear. That's a Bemes and a Machlokes. Because Rameir's actual case is talking about a person that tries to marry another person, a man trying to marry a woman, and he says, Li'acher she'tizgayri, or acher she'ezgayer. In the meantime, I'm still a goy, she's Jewish. I know I'm not Jewish yet, but in another 6 weeks,
but
the rabbi is going to give me a certificate.
Okay, but they're around. They're not.
What you're saying? I understand what you're saying. You're talking about.
Yeah, we
have that Machlokes. The same way that you're saying that they're around the Mushal, you have Peres Dekel. The Dekel's right, around. Right, the Peres are going to emanate from it. Yeah. Here, the real estate is around too. It's just I don't own it yet, but I'm in in the midst of trying to buy the real estate.
Okay.
Anyway, getting back to our Gemara, so that's the Shaila of Shmuel. Can you go and you can throw the word the Ikni into my ksuba and into my shtar choyf, but does it have legal effect, yes or no? Omrav Yosef Toshima. V'chum Oimrim. What is this all about? So, the Gemara doesn't go into all the facts, but Rishbam does. We have over here a malveh and a loifa. A malveh lent $100 to a loifa. Fine. And subsequently, 6 months later, the malveh sold a piece of property to that same loifa for $100. And the loiva gave the $100 to the malva for the purchase of the property. Okay, another 6 months later, maturity date of the loan. And now the malva says, loiva, here's my shtar, you owe me $100. The loiva says, are you nuts? I paid this off to you. I gave you pre the maturity, I paid it to you. So, well, what's your roof? What's the raya? The best proof is that I gave you $100 for a piece of property that you sold me. What you should have done is grab that $100, held on to it, and say, no property. I'm not going to go and sell you property. I'm going to take the $100 to collect on the chayv. Okay, we're talking about the maturity date already happened. Because the maturity didn't happen, he wouldn't be able to take the money. So there was a maturity date was Rish Chodesh Cheshvin of Tovshin Peihei. In other words, almost a month ago. Maturity, no, pay me $100. We'll see, I'm going to borrow, I'm going to get you. And then, Tesvov Cheshvin, 2 weeks later, the same Malve sold a piece of property to that Loive for $100. And the $100, the Loive coughed up $100 and he paid for the piece of property. Now, it's Rish Chodesh Kislev, and the Malve said, no, when are you going to go and pay me on my Chayv? Says the Loive, I already paid you on the Chayv. What's the proof? The proof is the fact that I gave you $100 for that piece of property. And you and I both know that if I still owed you the $100, you'd have grabbed the $100 and say, no sale, I'm not giving you any property. This was just a ruse, if you will, to get the money from you. I got the money, the loan is now paid off. You want to still buy my property? Come up with another $100.
I'm saying, there wasn't a kinyan then, obviously? Because in order for him to receive the property, there has to be some sort of kinyan, no?
Wow. Malva was in the middle of selling. When the Malva was selling the property to the Loive, says the Loive to the Malva. Not then, but 2 weeks later. I paid you for the property, correct? Yes. Who owns the property now? You, the Loive, owns the property. So there's no question that there was a sale. He gave him the property, he gave him the money. What the Loive is tining, what the Loive is saying is, Mr., you and I both know that if I still owed money to you on that outstanding loan, you would not have sold me the property and gotten the $100. You would have said, first, let's go and take care of the choiv that you owe me. Pay me the $100. I see you got $100, right? You're ready to go and buy. First, pay me the choiv. And then I'll go and sell you the property and give me another $100 for the property. The fact that I sold the property to you, the loiva says, the fact that you sold the property to me and took the $100 is the best proof in the pudding that I already paid you off that choiv at the maturity date. Because I wouldn't have paid you the choiv. Would you, in your wildest dreams, would you ever have gone and sold me a piece of property for the same $100? You would have said, I'm going to sell you a piece of property $100. First pay me the $100, and then I'll go and sell you a piece of property. Does that make sense?
I mean, it's not. Maybe he thought he was going to pay him anyway, and he wanted to make another sale. What if the Lova still has the shtar of the meaning?
You'll say that it was paid off, and you gave me a receipt. I can't find the receipt. Or
all right, but that's okay. So you go to court if you can't find the receipt.
The guy owes him the money. He's going to say, "Give me the money first, and then I'll share the next piece of property."
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's past due. He's saying, you know, he's nervous.
Exactly. When are you going to pay me my? Well, let's talk about the halvah later. First, let's go and sell a piece of property, and then we'll talk about the loan. No, I want to talk about the loan first. Okay. Pay off the loan, and then I'll sell you a piece of property. Anyway, getting back to our Gemara. That's what Admon holds. The Chachamim of our Gemara disagree. Chachamim ze hoye pikeach. Forget! This Malve is brilliant. Shemochale Sakarka. He sold him because of Karka. Mishu Yochale Mashkarei Olav. What does that mean? He sold him. He got $100 for that piece of property. And now Malve says, Loiva, when are you going to pay back the loan? I have no money.
Okay,
guess what?
My own property.
But you own property. And he's going to take that property away. And therefore, the Malva will now be made whole. So he was a very smart guy. This way he got paid $100 on his loan, and he got his property back. That's what the Chum held. Omale. So the choira with this, I've been pushed at the shaila of Shmuel, because after all, at the time that the Malva lent the money to the loiva didn't own that property. It's only property that he bought subsequently. When did he buy subsequently? He bought it from the Malva, but he didn't have it at the time of that original loiva. So how can the Malva go and say, I'm a pikeach, I'm going to go and grab the property now? No, the loiva should go and say, that wasn't there at the time of the original halva. But because he wrote in the shtar de'ikni, so I see from that, that I can be poishet Shmuel Shaila, that even though the loiva didn't own it at the time, but he bought it later on, the Mal can go and take that property to go pay off the chayv.
Writing in the shtar de'ikni means what?
That I will. That I, any property that I will buy in the future. All will right. A lien be on it?
So that's kind of for the Malva, like an insurance.
It enhances the money back guarantee that the loiva gives to the Malva. He's saying you have a shibud on all the chasim that I own and that I will buy and own in the future. Mm-hmm. And he bought this in the future. So therefore, we can push it to Shalev Shmuel. Yes, the ikni works that you can go and get from future chasim. But according to Rameir, there's no shaila, because Rameir holds all the makhnadav shalom loyla. This is according to Chum. Go back to the Gemara. I leave Rameir, the Yomar Allah, ain't got no shaila. Alaki Tiboylach, I leave the Rabbanan that holds ain't on the makhnadav shalom loyla. Can you go and give a shibut?
Yeah.
And therefore the Gemara says, of course, you see, from this case, the Chum Oyman, he can go and take the property, even though he only bought it after the maturity of the law.
As long as you write the ikni in the.
Exactly, as long as you write the ikni, it works.
Rami Rameir with nothing.
The Quinter made there's no shayla. A vada you can go and put on a shibud for future nechassim. Question: like the chachamim, can you put on a shibud for future nechassim? It's Amalei Rava. Rava says, I'm very sorry. This raya that what Rav Yosef wanted to be poishet, this shayla doesn't work. Why not? Because we have a famous rule: minei ka'amar, minei afel miglim de al kaspe ki kamaboylan de itni kano umachar. The ikni kana v'hoirish mai, says Rava, fellas, you didn't really understand the question that well. Obviously, if this loiva bought more property subsequently,
got a set of
ready. Yes, he has ready. Here he has it.
What's that?
Kufnun Zion.
Yeah, you were gonna take him.
Okay. He has a new stand. No hat.
No hat. Aren't you happy about that? He has nothing to talk about. Anyway. Please take a seat.
Mind.
Make yourself comfortable.
Thank you. I will do my best. Yes. Okay. Two levels.
Okay.
Oh boy.
Double protection. So says Rava minei afil meglimed al kaspe. Meaning, if you're talking about bnei choyrin, of course, anything that he buys subsequently is going to be subject to repayment of the loan, because anytime a malva comes to loiva and says, "Please pay me," sorry, I have no cash. What do you have? I only have tissue boxes. Give me your tissue boxes. I only have bottles of Bear Mayim seltzer. I'll take Bear Mayim. Whatever you can take, take. What happens if he doesn't have any tissue boxes, you don't have any seltzer? I want to take his shirt off his back. Literally. So Avada, even without the ikni, when you talk about B'nai Choyrin, anything that he gets, buys, receives, at any time in the future, now the Malva wants to collect, he collects whatever he has. The Shaila of Shmuel was, what happens if after the loive got money, he went and bought property, he took that property and he sold it to someone else. And now the malva comes to the loive and says, loive, no, go and pay on the choiv. Chonish kegelt. What, I heard that you had money just a few weeks ago. Yeah, I used that to go and buy a piece of property. Okay, give me that piece of property. Yeah, but I already sold that piece of property to somebody else. Now the question is, can the Malva collect from that piece of property that the loiva owned? He didn't own it at the time of the original halva. It was the ikni. He bought it subsequently. And he sold it subsequently. Or for that matter, as the Gemara is going to tell us, if he was moidishit, no, please, if I need more, let you know. He was moidishit subsequently. What means moidish subsequently? That unfortunately, subsequently, he died, and then it fell to the yarshim. The question is that property also encumbered by the lien of the original halva because he threw in the word the ikni? So getting back to the Gemara. Amalei Rava. The raya that you brought, Rav Yosef, is not a good raya. Why? Because minei ka'amar, if you're telling me that he bought property and he, the loiva, still owns the property, then you don't need to come on to liens. It's bnei chayrin, and grab whatever you can get. Afil miglimit al kasve. Ki kamibayil, and the shayla of Shmuel was, that when you write the ikni in the shtar, not only the chasm that he owned today, then the chasm going to own in the future, and then konani taka bought the chasm in the future, and umacher, and he sold those nechasim in the future. Does a lien attach to those nechasim that were not there at the time of the halva, but were only purchased subsequently? Or the ikni, he wrote in the shtar, yes, any future property, and then kana, and then he bought the property, v'hoirish, and then he didn't live to pay off the choiv, but rather he left that piece of property for yorshim. My, can now the Baal Choyv come to the Yorshim and say, this belonged to your father? It was only bought after your loan was already settled. In other words, you already took the loan 5 years ago. At that time, this property didn't exist in our father's estate. He hadn't bought it yet. He only bought it subsequently. In fact, he only bought it 3 or 4 weeks ago. And then, unfortunately, he passed away. And now it belongs to us. According to Shmuel, Shmuel's Shaila is, if in the original loan document said, property, the ikni that I will buy, is there a lien on that property, which is no longer the loivis, either because he sold it, or because the loivis died and he left it for his children. So we can be pointed that from our Mishnah. Amar Rav Chuna Toshema. Nofel Abayis Olavi Al Oviv Olavi Al Moirishot. Like our case of Yaakov and Reuven that never both passed away in a building which collapsed, Rachmon Litzlan. V'hoisa olav k'subasishot bal choyv. Yorshe av oimrim haben meis rishim yakach meis av. And therefore, the ben never received a penny from any of this. And that's why the ishim bal choyv will go home without getting any response. U'bal choyv is saying, no, av meis rishim. And after that, the ben passed away. And therefore, we happen to be legitimate bali choyv, as creditors of Reuven, because Reuven was the one that because they say that Reuven, that the father passed away first, leaving an estate for Reuven, and therefore we want to go and collect from Reuven. So, that's what we learned in the Mishnah. The ikni kana umocha, the ikni kana v'hoirish loy mishtabed. If you're going to go and answer the shaila of Shmuel, that even if you put in the ikni word, the ikni clause in that original ksuvas isha, or in the original promissory note from the malve to the loive, guess what? When did the loive receive the property? He received the property for one split instance when his father passed away. He got the property. A minute later, he Nebuch also passed away. Yeah, but that's all ikni property. That's property that came in after the original loan. In fact, it only came in 5 minutes ago when the two of them passed away. So he was, and father didn't hold on to those funds because he never passed away a minute later. So who did it go to? He was Kona, he received the funds, and then he was Moirish, and he gave it to his children, that is to Chanoich and to Falu. So he was, Ninami the Av Mispiration. Even if you would say that, Taka, we can determine with certainty that Yaakov passed away before Reuven passed away. And therefore Reuven received Yerusha from his father. But that's still the Iknihu. That's future property that wasn't there in Reuven's estate at the time that Reuven initially took a loan or when Reuven got married. So you're going to tell me if you can collect from that, is the charaya that even though there was property that you only received later and then you sold it, or you moirish it, there's still a lien on it. Even though at the time of the original loan, it was a davish loy bala oilam. It works. So we can be poishet the shayla of Shmuel. Yes, you can be mishabed the chosim that you didn't even receive at the time, or that you didn't own at the time of the original loan.
If you write ikni.
I'm sorry, if you write the word ikni, exactly. Rav Nachman said, Zeira chavrin, Zeira, our friend, more usually refers to him as Reb Zeira, but Reb Nachman and Zeira were contemporaries, were colleagues. So he said, Zeira, our friend, Tirgama, he said, Nishka Kasha, Nishka Raya, Mitzvah Yisoyim Lefroya Choyves Avien. There's a Mitzvah Yisoyim to go and pay for the Choyves of their father, and therefore, that's the reason. So it's not because he wrote the Ikni, even if he wouldn't have written the word the Ikni. The fact that Reuven ultimately received those nechassim, in other words, if we can pinpoint that Yaakov died first, and then Reuven got the nechassim, so it's even without the Ikni. The reason why the Isha and the Baal Choyf can pay back is because the Yisoyim have this, not only a moral obligation, but a legal obligation to go and pay it off, and therefore, even without the word ikne, they got to pay it, is an automatic shibud for payment of those choyfs.
Excuse me, you just said the word a legal obligation, and it says mitzvah. Earlier you described it as a mitzvah. Why are you now recasting it as a legal obligation?
Because that's what the Gemara is recasting, and not me.
It's a mitzvah, not a legal obligation. You don't have to. It's a nice thing.
What we were talking about earlier was when there was no money in the estate, and you have children that either have or don't have money. So it's a very, very nice thing. It's not a legal requirement, not even an ethical or equitable requirement. If the children want to go and leave their father with a good name, instead of people always saying, Yanko Smith, you know, he died, he owed me $100. Halavai to me, only $100. Me, he owed $5,000. Halavai, $5,000. I lent him $10,000. So you can imagine his name is Nebuch covered in mud all over. So it's nice if the Yorushim go and pay from their own pocketbooks, and they go and pay off those chayvus. They have no legal requirement whatsoever. Here we're talking about the Yaakov. If we were able to pinpoint the Yaakov died first, there were special cameras there, and they see everything. Yaakov died a minute earlier, and Reuven said, "Oy, my daughter Nebuch back." And then a second later, Reuven passed away. So during that split moment, Reuven became a multimillionaire, right? So even if without the words the ikni, now the assignment become enriched because of Reuven's largesse that he received from Yaakov, says our Gemara, says Rav Nachman. Even if there wouldn't be an ikni clause, just the fact now that the children are rich, not from outside sources, but from the estate of their father, they have a mitzvah to go and pay off all of those chayvos. So it's not from their money, it's from the yarshined money from their father. When did the father ever yarshin that? When he was in the building collapse, when his father passed away a minute before him.
Why are you distinguishing between money that the heirs have from their father and money they have independently they work themselves? If the word is mitzvah and not a chov, it feels like it has the same legal obligation tethering them to pay the money.
The reason why it says mitzvah is because we are still in the throes of the Havamina. We haven't gotten to the Maskana yet. In the meantime, think in your mind as if it would say, Choyv al Yisoyim Lefraya, and then you would be satisfied. Yeah? Good. So therefore, the Gemara at this point assumes that even without the Ikni, this estate has with it Choyvois, and the kids have to pay the Choyvois, even though it's not, even though it was only property that their father received many, many years after that original choiv had been made, or after the mother and the father had gotten married. Many, many years later, he finally got that piece of nechasim, and he only got it a minute before he passed away. Fine, they have a choiv to go and pay it. Maskul Ravashi, milva al pehu. That's not a milva bishtar. It's a milva al peh. V'rav Shmuel the Amatavai, milva al peh, and he goyv alim neyoshim v'loim en alakuchais. Now, what does he mean, milva al peh? We don't mean the original bal choiv. We don't mean the original ksubas isha. We mean that the father has money now, and now we want to go and collect from those funds. Who has the obligation now to go and pay? The obligation is now on the yorshim. And the yorshim, it's only milva al peh. In other words, there is no shtar vis-a-vis the yorshim. And therefore, why do they, even if it's a mitzvah, however, it doesn't form a lien on either the yorshim or the lekuchais. And therefore, if it's a milva al peh, treitach ravashi, this mitzvah al yisoyim lefroya, this is not written anywhere. This is rather an al peh type of choiva. That being the case, vaiti, you can't go and take from yorshim or from lekuchais. Therefore, says Imar, that cannot be the pshat in our Mishnah, that there was no ikni clause. It had to be that there was an ikni clause, and therefore we can be poishit Shmuel Shaila after all. And for the Gemara, Elohamani Rameirhi, the only way to show, or the only way to answer that we do not have an ironclad, bulletproof answer to Shmuel Shaila, remember Shmuel Shaila was only according to the Rabbanon, we're saying that Mishnah, our Mishnah only goes according to Rameir. And then, of course, he can go and be Meshabed Dovash Lobelaylam. And therefore, we are not poishid our Shaila. So says him, well, let's be poishid it from another Mishnah. Omer of Yaakim and Harpakoid Mishmei Deravdina, Toshima. Shtari Choyb HaMugdomin Psulin, VaMulchorin Ksheim. What is Shtar Mukdom? What's a Shtar Mukher? We all know Shtar Mukdom is that you predated the Shtar. Shtar Mukher is you postdated the Shtar.
Oh,
now, in some cases, this is a bad thing. In some cases, it's a good thing. In the case of the Shtar Choyv HaMukdomin, why, if you go and predate the Shtar, is it possible? Because what you're trying to do is the Malva wants to be able to latch on to properties that the Loiva already sold. He right. No longer owns. Right. And therefore, he owned it until a few months ago. And the reason why he's taking halva is because he sold all the properties and he's still in debt. That's why he's taking a loan. The Malva says, do you have any real estate left? No, I sold everything. Really everything. When did you just sell the last property? 2 weeks ago. You know what? I'll give you the money today, but let's write in the shtar, put in the shtar, October 31st. September, whatever. A month ago, 2 months ago. In 5 or 10 years from now, when I'm going to go and come and collect, and you're not going to have the money, I'll go to those guys that bought the property from you in the last 2 weeks. I'll say, ha ha, look at your shtar. You went and bought in November. And guess what? And I have a shtar that goes back to October to September. And therefore, I have a lien on your properties. That's why a shtar muktam is possible. What about ma'ukher? Ma'ukher is the malviz being really a sweetheart. In which respect? Because the loive is in the throes of trying to go and sell some properties. And he knows that any properties he's going to go and sell, people are going to say, oh, but there's a lien on this property. And why would I want to buy this property? I'll only buy it at a discount because there's a lien. Maybe that person's going to go and collect from it. I have a good idea. We're going to post-date this shtar, Rishbam says, for 6 months from now. And during that period of time, I can sell all the properties that I want. And the shtar and the lien will only attach to any properties they own at that time. So if the Malv is willing to go along with this, he's really being a very nice person. Because he's saying, I'm being moichel on any shibud, on any of these properties that the loiva would like to go and sell. And the Likuchais are not going to want to buy if they know that there happens to be a lien on it for this chayf. Okay, so that's very straightforward. Mucharim is kshay. Right, one of you thought kadaita the ikni kana umochar or the ikni kana vahirish loy mishtabid mucharin amay ksheirin the ikni hu. What does Igmar mean to say? We're focusing on the fact that the malva is waiving his rights vis-a-vis any properties that the loiva owns today and may sell in the future, between now and between 6 months from now. He's saying, I don't want to put any liens on that property. I want you to be able to sell them without any clouds. Fine, we're going to post-date my halva for 6 months from now. Nice guy. But that's properties that the loiva sells. What about properties that the loiva buys in the interim? If he's going to go and buy any such properties, since you're writing inside the shtar, the ikni, the future properties are going to go and be bought. So now, when did he actually give the halva? He gave the halva today. We're going to write today in the shtar, we're going to post-date it for a date 6 months from now. But we're writing in the shtar, anything the ikni that I'm going to buy in the future will also be uncovered by a lien for you. What happens if in the interim, in fact, he bought something from today until 6 months from now? Ooh, so now what's going to happen? We're going to say in 5 years from now, we're going to look at the date of the shtar, because that's when the maturity date is, and we're going to see that it's the date after the purchase by the loiva of a number of properties. Oh, so they're going to go and say, so you own those properties at the time of the loan. In truth, I'm sorry?
They should be
Mishubadim. However, the problem is that since the loan was taken today, at the time that the loan was taken today, he didn't own any of these properties. He only owned the properties a month later, 2 months later. So what happens now? I'm post-dating the shtar for 6 months later. 5 years from now, the Malva wants to go and collect. and the Loida says, I have no money. Okay, so let me go and see if there are any mishubadim, any properties with liens. And we discover, yeah, there are these properties that were sold now during this interim period between the actual loan and between the date of the shtar. And what's going to happen is, he's going to say, well, the date of the shtar says that the date of the shtar was, let's say in September, no, that's, let's say 6 months from now, in June, the date of the shtar is in June, and what happened in the interim, he bought properties, and then he'll say, well, you see, June, these properties were already in your rishus at that time, because you bought them in November, December, January, February, etc. Ah, says so, Oktimara, if you
why,
hold...
Why don't we say, we said before, that these are properties that are not encumbered to someone else, it's the Lova now who bought the properties.
He bought the properties, and then right, he subsequently sold them. And he sold them after that. If he retained them, that would be Rova Minei, a Philippine Al-Katsaspe. That's what he always says, the Ikni, Kona, Umochat. They wrote the Ikni in the Shtar, he bought, and then he sold it to somebody else. That's the whole Shaila, that the Loiva sold it in the interim. Ah, Shazoktimar, by going and putting in the later date, guess what? You're impressing a lien on those properties that weren't there, Bishas, the original Halva'a. So why does it say Mulchar Mark Sheirim? This should be a deceptive practice. Mm-hmm. Because by postponing the date, now you're on the date of the loan, which is June. By that time, the Loiva has collected some more properties. My friend, if you hold the Ikni attaches to the properties, then there's no problem. Because now in November, when he wrote out the Shtar, even though it was written for a post date, but Lamasa, the Halva took place now. When you hold the Ikni, anything in the future will be captured by the lien of the Shtar. So then anything that he buys in December and in January and February, that's fine if you hold the Ikni. But if you hold the Ikni is worthless and meaningless, that you cannot attach it, then by making the Shtar Mu'ukhar for June's date, then you'll say, well, the Ikni is not future. By the time the Halva took place, all of these properties were already owned by him. It's not true. It's because you post-dated the shtar. So therefore, this post-dating of the shtar, if you hold the ikni, doesn't work, could be a deceptive practice, and we should say, mucharem are psulim. And Mike Shane, why do we say it's kosher? It's the ikni. These are all properties that were not there at the time of the original halva'a. These are only properties that were bought later on. And I'm saying that mucharem are kshenim. It's a charai that ikni works, and you can put a loan, you can impress a lien on properties that you don't even own yet, but that you'll own in the future. Furthermore, the same thing Teres said before, Hamani Rameihi, the Amodu Maktav Shalom Le'olam, and we're not asking according to Rameir, only asking according to the Chacham. Amar Rav Mishar Shem Shemei Derov Atoshim, I have another raya. Lishvach Karkois Ketzad. Now what means Shvach Karkois? Shvach Karkois, this is a braisa which is explaining one little piece of a larger Mishnah. In the Sechthus Gittin, there's a Mishnah that says, Ein moitzin l'achidas pedus yishvach karkois amazoyin ha'ish v'abonais menechosim yishubadim memnei tikkenu oilam. What does that mean? It means, although normally you can go and collect a debt from the chosim yishubadim, yishubadim means properties that were owned previously and that were sold, because there is that lien on the property. But certain things al tikkenu oilam you cannot collect. So, for instance, the easy case is, that is supporting the wife and the children's mezoinous needs after the chasashon, the husband passes away. What happens? A person goes and Brother Shaiyach, thank you very much. Have a good Shabbos and a good Nechodesh and all the very best. Anyway, getting back, thanks for reminding us. If you can manage 7 o'clock Sunday morning, Rosh Chodesh.
Okay? 7 o'clock,
right.
Rosh Chodesh.
Right, on Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
And if you're a Shtickle Baal Tefillah, we'll give you Hallel. You'll be able to go and sing that you're the nicest Nagunim.
I have to cancel my share.
Okay, well, that's up to you.
I'm the host.
Okay, that's a different story. Anyway, so getting back to our Gemara. So certain things is because they have no kitzvah, there is no set amount, if you're going to allow for that, any person who gets married, in his ksuv, it says, I'm going to go and support my wife, and I'm going to go and support my kids. So, fine. And then afterwards, he takes the halva. And then, unfortunately, he gets hit by a car, and Nebuch, he dies. Now, there's a requirement. The estate has to pay now for the mozeinu isha v'abonais. This isha may not get married for another 25 years. these bonis are not going to be of age for another 10 years. You add up the amount of food that they're going to eat over the next 10 years. That could be a huge amount. So nobody's ever going to want to lend money to a married man, knowing that there is going to be this outstanding choiv if he passes away prematurely to go and pay for all the mazonis and the ishva bonis. So if you take an oilam, you can't collect from the chasim mishubat. Okay. One of the other cases is shvach karkoy. Shvach karkoy means that someone went and improved the value of a piece of property. That also, says the Gemara, you cannot collect from the chasim mishubat. And now the Bryce explains it in greater detail. Shvach karkoy is ketzer. Harishimachar soda lechaber. A person owned the field and he sold it to someone else, and at that time the field was totally barren. And the lekech went vishbicha, and he improved on it. How did he improve upon it? By putting in fertilizer, by planting, by putting up a fence, doing whatever one needs to do to make the soda a much more valuable piece of property than it was until now. Okay. Ubob al choyv. And now a bal choyv that had a debt from years ago on this moicher, he said, well, you know, look in the document. At the time that I went and lent the money, that loiva owned the field, since I have a shtar, the shtar makes an automatic lien on that piece of property, I, the bal choyv, I'm taking it away from you, from the lekech. Says the lekech, okay, you took away the property, but I added another $10,000 to make this property so much more beneficial, to put in the fertilizer and the seeding and the irrigation system and fences and the whole geshef. So the Baal Choyv went to the Tarfa, Kishu Goyv, and now the Lekeach wants to get his money back. He's not going to get it from the Baal Choyv. He goes back to the original Mocher and says, Mocher, do you heard what happened? What happened? The Baal Choyv took my property away. I want to go and collect from you. So Goyva Esakem and Chosim Yishubadim Esashavach and Chosim and Eichayim. That moicher that sold him the property, he has a money back guarantee. He has to go and pay the lekech. The lekech can go and collect that money back guarantee if the moicher doesn't have enough assets, enough bnei choyin. He can go and collect from the chasim mishubadim, because when he bought the property, he also had a lien on all the other properties for his money back guarantee. So the keren he can go and get from. If there are any nechasim mishubadim out there, he'll take it and collect his keren. Hashemach, he cannot go and collect from nechasim mishubadim, because that's a dovash ein lekitzva. I can go and put in shevach, I can put $100,000 into a field, I can put a nickel into the field. So therefore, they take an oilam, you can only collect it from nechasim menei choy. Frank Dimar, visol kadaitoch, the ikni kana umacha, the ikni kana vahoyrish, loy mishtabed, bal choyv amai goyv eshvacha. How was the Baal Choyv able to take away this field with the renovations and the improvements in the first place? What the Baal Choyv should be able to do is be able to grab the value of this field the way it was before the improvements and renovations. That he's entitled to. But any new renovations, this is the Ikni, this is newly established assets by refining and improving the asset. That wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. So therefore the Lekeach should be able to go and say to the Baal Choyv, when I bought this property, it was worth, I paid for it $10,000. I added another $10,000 in renovations. I'm going to pay you $10,000, or you can take half of the field, because the other half I put in. You have no right to go and grab that away. The fact that it says that the Baal Choyv can take away the whole $20,000, and now the Lekeach has to go and collect wherever he can get collection from the Mocher, or from the B'nei Chorin of the Moicher, etc. Why was the Baal Choyv entitled to take that Shevach in the first place? It must be because of the Ikni factor, that in the original Baal Choyv Shtar it says, I, the Loiva, owe you 10,000, as well as anything, the Ikni, any type of new asset that I'm going to have in the future. And what was that asset that he had in the future? That this property improved in value from 10,000 to 20,000. That's why he was able to grab it. But that didn't exist at the time. Oh, so you see that you can have an Ikni clause, and that works even to go and chab properties that were only bought or refined or improved many years later. So we can be poishet the shaila of Shmuel.
The Ikni is with an aleph, which means I bought.
Yeah.
which means
it's true. And who
bought? In this case, it was not the Vole, the Love who bought or
the Love bought the property and he sold it to the Lekeach.
The Lekeach improved it.
Exactly.
So it should not apply that because it means I bought.
The Gemara considers that also to be newly formed, a newly found asset. You're right. Technically, he didn't go and actually buy the Shevach. He bought the property. But when he sold the property, you agree that the lien attached to it, because that was there at the time of the original loan. That's no question about that. Now that the Lekeach has improved the property and it happens to be nicer and more beautiful and all the rest, the question is, how does the Baal Chayv collect from that property in the first place? The Lekeach should go and say, I put in the money, I put in the sweat, I put in all the expense. You should have no right to go and take it. But it says that the Baal Chayv does have a right to get that Shevach. Why does he have the right to get that Shevach? Because that's like an ikni, something that was acquired, something that was improved later on. You're right, it's not really acquired as much as it was improved. But Lamaisa, the Gemara says he can go and take from it. So you see that even though this didn't exist at the time, you can still have a shibud on it. And again, the Gemara gives the same tarot as before. And we're asking our question, Aliba de Rabbonin and not Aliba de Rabbein. Okay, so now the Gemara starts a new shtickalina. Put two dots. Imtim Tulaymer. We're not going to be poshut the original Shaila. We're just going to go the next step. Imtim Tulaymer, if you're going to be poshut the Ikni Kanamach and the Ikni Kanamahayish, Loi Mishtabit, that in fact you have no right to go and get any new Nechasim that come on the scene post the original Hava. No, Halei Mishtabit. So that's where you're poshut. But Imtim Tulaymer Mishtabit, what happens if you hold that there is such a new Shibud? In other words, instead of having only one loiver, there are two loivers. You have first loiver number one, Yankel, loiver number two, Beryl. Each one of them has in their promissory note a special ikni clause. They're not only properties which are there today, but any properties that come in the future. Let's assume we didn't buy any properties in the future. No properties in the future. And then after that, this Malve lent twice, one to Yankel, one to Beryl. And now the maturity date is the same date for both Yankel and for Beryl. It's now November 30th or 31st or whatever it is. And he says, okay, got to go and pay. And both of them are standing there in line, Yankel and Beryl. I have no B'nai Chayin. Okay, but there are Meshubadim. Who gets first right to those Meshubadim? Yankel gets first right because he was the first Malve. If anything is left over, then Beryl, who is the second Malva, he can go and collect from the Mishubat. So that's already Dover Pashut. Now the question is, we're not talking about the old Nechasim that were there at the time of the Halva, we're talking about Ikni Nechasim that he bought subsequently. Do you say there too that the lien of Yankel attaches first, and then the lien of Beryl attaches first? Or do you say no, that as soon as he bought the property, both liens attached automatically? Imtim Tzoloime Mishtabit, that the Ikni clause works to go and form a Shibit on subsequently acquired, after acquired Nechasim, do both of them get the same Shibit on it, the same lien on it simultaneously? Or do you say, no, Yankel gets his lien on it 1 second first because he lent the money first, and then Beryl gets his lien on it the next second because he lent the money second. Mau. On this new, after-acquired property, Lekama Mishtabit, does Reuve, does Yankel have first dibs at it? Or Lebasar Mishtabit, do you say that it goes to the second one? The Losh and Lebasar Mishtabit is a bissel shver. Why would there be a svara that it should go to the second over the first? After all, these are both two shibudim. The Kama, Yankel lent the money first. Beryl lent the money second. At best, you should go and say they should split it because both of their liens attached at the same time. Even though Yankel gave his loan before Beryl gave his loan, but this new after-acquired property happened at one instant, so you can say a svara that Yankel attaches because he was the first lender, or you can say both attach at the same time. But to go and say only the second one and not the first one, the choy is a bissel shver svara. And in fact, the Gemara is poishit. Omer of Nachman, Hamilzi Boyolan, we had this Shaila. Vishalchum Itam, and they sent from Eretz Yisrael, Rishon Kana. Just like the Rishon has first dibs on any properties that existed at the time of the original loan, he also has first rights against any property that were bought subsequently because of the ikni clause. Rav Huna Amar no yichloiku. Both of them go and take their liens attached at the same moment. What was that moment when the loiva bought the property? So they have to go and split it. How do they split it? Rishbam says they don't split it 50-50. They split it proportionally to the amount of the loan. So if the loan of Reuven was a mushel, $300, and the loan of Shimon was $100, it's three times as much. So whatever this property is worth, the mushel is worth $100, he'll take 75 and he'll take 25. In other words, yechloiku proportionally according to the amounts of their outstanding loans. They'll split it up. And Omer Avina, Mahadura Kamad Rav Ashi, Omelon Rishon Kana, Madura Basad Rav Ashi, Omelon Yachloiku. What is this Madura Kama Madura Basa? Today you have that when you get new Svarim, sometimes the Sefer will say Madura Kama, this was the first printing, and then this is a Madura Basa, this is a later edition. And later edition is not just that they reprinted it by going and just making the same photo page and selling it, but rather that usually the Madura Basra means that there were changes from Madura Kama to Madura Basra.
But no additions, because it's a new edition.
No additions because it's a new edition. I remember when I was a young bucher, I visited the Stipler Zatzal. Stipler was the father of Reb Chaim Kanievsky Zatzal. And the Stipler was a tremendous guy, and he wrote many, many, many svarim, Kilis Yaakov Alashas. And I remembered that he was selling it from his house. He was selling it dirt cheap, you know, just enough to make him to be able to have mozin lechol and beged lilboish. He was a poor person in terms of money. Anyway, so I came into his house and I bought many of the Kilis Yaakov that I didn't previously have, but I already had one above Metzia. So I had asked the stipler, I see you have a Madura Basra on Bamatzi, in other words, a new edition. Mm-hmm. I have the first edition. Is it Kedai to go and pay now and buy the second edition since already the first one? Mm-hmm. So he looked at me and he smiled. He says, I don't know if either one was Kedai, the first one or the second one. You want to buy it?
That's
great. It was great. Nice, yeah. Anyway, so of course we had a nice smile, nice laugh.
See, I don't know if you had to pay addition for
the addition for the new edition. Exactly. So now, but what does that mean in connection with Rav Ashi, Madura Kama, Madura Basa? So Rav Shabam tells us something fascinating in the name of Rav Haigoy. Mm-hmm. Who is this? Let's see, where is this? Madura Basra. 2, 4, 6 lines into the wide lines. Mm-hmm. Rav Ashi, kishe chazer limudei pam shnia, when he chazed it second time, nimtza b'tshuvas Rav Hai, u'bepir shebein hachanan. That what? Rav Ashi chaya shishim shana. Rav Ashi's life was only 60 years. Throughout the year, of course, he was learning. And 2 months a year, which were the Chodshei HaKala, which are Nisan v'Tishrei, the reason why these are called Yarchei Kala, is because Gans Klal Yisrael used to get together Nisan time and Tishrei time to hear the Shiurim and the Drushes of the Rabbanim, particularly those that were related to the forthcoming Chagim, so that they should know the Halacha and the spirit of the Chag, etc. So during those 2 months in Nisan v'Tishrei, what did he do? He used to go and chazer all his lima during those 2 months.
Wow.
As a result of those 2 extra months each year, he was Messiah. He went through all of Shas again and again. He knew. The second 30 years, he did the same thing. All to those 2 extra months, he chazed everything which he had learned. Madura Kama, Hein Shloishim Shana Rishainim. Madura Kama means the first 30 years. Madura Basa means Hein Shloishim Shana Machrayim. So the first 30 years, when he would chazen, when he would learn, he would teach, he held like the first version, Rishon Kana. 30 years later, he's like, no, Vilchasi Achloiko, he had a new edition, and that new edition was no longer the Kama, but now Yachloike, we should split it down the middle. The Hilchasan Halacha is Yachloike, we split it. Now, if you're wondering to yourself, what's the big accomplishment that he reviewed Gan Shas in 30 years during those 2 months? After all, Reb Chaim Kanievsky Zatzal used to go and do a Siyam Hashas every single year on Erev Pesach. When everybody else make Erev Pesach for the B'choinim, he used to go and be Messiah Gan Shas, but it wasn't only Gan Shas, it was also Gan Yerushalmi, it was Gan Medrash Rabba, Medrash Tanchuma, Gan Rambam, and Shulchan Aruch. Once a year he was Messiah everything. Wow. So you're telling me that 30 years, Remember, Rav Ashi didn't have a Gemara. Rav Ashi was the one that was Masada the Gemara. So he had to take all the Mishnayos, which had already been put together by Rabbeinu Kaddish by Rebbe, and now he had to go to all the yeshivas, and to Surah, and to Nehedon, and to Pumbedisa, and to Yisrael, and everywhere, and had to send letters and say, can you tell me, Pshat, this Mishnah Chor is Tois of this Braisa? This Braisa is different than this Tois after. And I have a Mishnah Nida, which is not like the Mishnah in the Nachas. And therefore, he had to collect all of that together, codify it, put it together with Ravina, and in 30 years, during those 2 months, he would chazer to make sure that everything was letter perfect, and then the next 30 years, he reviewed it once again to make sure everything was perfect, and he made various maduras, and that's Madura Basra. And yes, Barry, you want to say something?
It doesn't make sense. If you lived, the man, if Rav Ashi lived 60 years, I mean, he was learning Shas from infancy, from day one. I mean, 60 years can't be Lavdavka. And he had a few years where he had to learn how to paste it. And put together.
You're 100% right. So presumably, even though our Rishbam, as you know, Rishbam is very succinct, very, very short Pirush, not that expansive. So when he said about the 60 years, he meant Taka from the age of 5 or 8 or 10 or 12 when he started learning. Okay. Anyway. There was a very famous, he say, Pirush in the back of the Gemara, which was written by Rabbi Tzal HaKoyim Mivilna. Rabbi Tzal HaKoyim Mivilna was brilliant, and he has a pirush in the back of the all the Vilna Shasim. So at the age of 12, not only did he know Shas, he knew it on his fingertips at the age of 12. And at age of 12, they read him a shidduch, and he became a chosin before his bar mitzvah. He didn't get married before the bar mitzvah, because you can't have a kinyan, right? We discussed that yesterday. You have to check Seif Saris. Okay, whatever. Anyway, he only got married later, but he became a chosin already before bar mitzvah. So at the Vart, engagement, tanoim, whatever you want to call it, one of the darshanim said, now I understand what it means at the bris, that we say, Ken yikonis l'toira l'chupa ulamasim toira. Many mafarshim ask, what does that mean, Ken yikonis l'toira l'chupa ulamasim toira? Then chumash l'mikra, when a child's already 5 years old, he starts learning chumash. So that's toira. Masim toivim l'choira is when he gets bar mitzvah. At that time, all of his mitzvahs now accrue on his balance sheet. Masim toivim. And then subsequently, he gets 18, 20, 22, 24, whatever, he's going to get married. So the order should go and be l'toira, l'masim toivim, or l'chuppa. He says, now I understand it. We are wishing every single father, when he has a yingala, you should have a yingala like Rabbi Tzal HaKoyin Mivilna. That what? He was toira, chuppa, even before the masim toivim. Not that he was getting married then, but he's already in line to get married already before his bar mitzvah. That's why. So we wish every father, he should have such a Talmud Chacham that he should be roi, that he should already become a chosin already before in the masim toivim, before he becomes bar mitzvah. Doesn't happen every day. Anyway, we continue on. Freiti Marietz Meisvei on this halacha that we just learned now. Hilchas Yachloiku Meisvei L'Shvach Karkois Keitzar. We repeat what we learned before. Hershimachas Rulchaber Vishvicha and the Lekiach went and he improved upon it. Ubalchoiv Vitarif and the Balchoiv came and he was Torif and he took away the Soda and he took away the Soda together with the Shvach. Now the Lekiach wants to collect on his money back guarantee from the Meicher. Kishu Goiva when he collects Goiva is a Kemik. He gets that Karen. Yeah. Why? Because there was a shtar at the time that he bought the property that said in it, I give you money back guarantee and you're going to get everything back. And he gets a shevach, any type of money that he put in his overhead expense to improve the property, that he can collect min chosim b'nechay. Pray to more of the imisa, if you're going to go and tell me that the ikni clause helps, that you're going to be able to go and attach not only the property at that time, but even future property, guess what? This lekeach, when the balchoiv comes to him, he should say, you balchoiv, you want to collect the property together with the shvach based on this ikni after acquired or after refined and improved clause, like you said before, because ikni doesn't only mean what you purchase later, but what you improve the property later, you can go and collect from that. Guess what? I am also a balchoiv. How am I balchoiv? Because when I bought the property, there's a money back guarantee. And that's why I'm able to collect the keren from other people's nechasim and shabbat.
You said before, you never ended.
Exactly. So I want to go and collect the shevach also being that that's part of my mishubadim, even though it wasn't there at the time of the mechira of the sale, but this is after acquired property. There's an ikni clause. I want to collect from the shevach just like you collect from the shevach. Vim isa chati shvach mi boilei. The lekeach should be able to go and say, yes, you, the Baal Chayv, are entitled to a portion of the shvach, but I'm also entitled to a portion of the shvach. Let's split it, or at least proportionately. So, Timara, you're 100% right. When it says that the Baal Chayv can go and take away shvach, and when it says that the lekeach can try to collect on that shvach from the moicher, each one is talking about chatzi shvach. Not that the Baal Chayv can take away all of it. He can only take away his proportionate portion, and the lekeach can retain his proportionate portion. And when he's now going to the moicher to pay back the money back guarantee, it's only on the chatzi shvach, whatever was taken away by the Baal Chayv. With this, we've concluded. Thank you, everybody, for listening.